Good morning.
So, last time we talked a bit more about right policies for Cassius. We went over sort of our two big decisions when we're designing Cassius about how we handle rights. And that was this decision about right allocate, which is, do we put a block in the cache when there is a write and it's not already there? And the decision about write back or write through. Which is, if we have something in the cache, when do we update the next level? Do we do it right away, which is write through, or do we defer it as long as possible, which is write back? And when we defer it, you generally want to not have to write everything to the next level, so we need to remember that we deferred it, and that was what we had a dirty bit for. Then we talked a bit about trade-offs in cache design. So we mentioned that we have all these decisions when we make a cache of how big it is, how many ways it has, how big the blocks are, what policies we use, and so on. And these are our trade-offs, and they're trade-offs, and one way we can think about them is in terms of this average memory access time idea, that there's some amount of time it's going to take to access memory when we're writing code, as far as like how fast will this move instruction run. And we have hit time, which is sort of how fast our cache is when we have a cache hit. But often things that improve our hit time are going to hurt our miss rate, how often we actually have a hit. And we have a third thing of this miss penalty, that when we have a miss, how much extra time is that going to take? And there's some things we can do to attack that problem in our cache designs, even though they don't have as direct an impact on sort of how fast hits are or how many hits we have. So that was one way of thinking about our trade-offs, was sort of thinking about how it affects each of these factors for our caches. Another way of thinking about them was dividing up our accesses, that if we look at the accesses a program does, we can kind of assign blame to what part of our cache design caused them. And we have the three categories. So we had compulsory, or also known as cold misses, where, the reason was that we didn't predict the future and load the value before the program used it. We have these capacity misses, where the problem is just that our cache wasn't big enough, that if you wanted to fix those misses, we need some cache with more storage, assuming we keep the same block size. And we had conflict misses, which is that our cache wasn't clever enough about how it used the blocks it had, so we had a conflict that caused us to get rid of values that would have been useful later, even though we had extra space in our cache. And so that's another way of thinking about the trade-offs, that if we can look at the types of misses and decide what cache design changes we want to make based on what types of misses we're going to try to fix. And finally, we started talking about data misses and C code, which is going to be our main topic for today. So questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so I'm going to go over a couple quiz questions. So I'm going to go over quiz question two. So in quiz question two, we were asking, when we did a write to this set of caches, where did we have dirty and valid bits end up getting sent? And the caches were initially empty. So we need to think about first our write allocate or write no allocate policy. Because since the value was not in the cache, we need to decide, do we put it there? And for the L1, the policy was write no allocate. So the answer is we don't. There's no modifications to the cache itself from the write, and it just gets sent to the next level. So then we have to look at the L2. In the L2, it's write allocate, so we do put something there. And it was also write back. So in write back, we defer the actual write to the next level, which in this example would have been the L3 cache, and instead just mark it dirty. So remember later on, when we eventually evict this probably, to send it to the L3. Some questions about quiz question two? Yes?
Write no allocate cache
This question, so right now allocate caches only getting values that are read in, not written? Yes. Okay. And I guess to clarify that, but that doesn't mean the cache isn't updated on a write, because if you've read in something and overwrite it, it better update the cache, or else that'd be very confusing if we read that later on. Other questions? Yeah.
So if a valid bit is set for L2 and not L1.
A valid bit is set for L2 and not L1? Yes, because we don't do anything with the L1 cache on the right once we find out it's not in there. Find out the value's not already there.
So it just skips over the first cache.
Question, so it just skips over the first cache? Yes. Okay, other questions? Okay, so then let's talk about quiz question 4, which also a lot of people had problems with. So in quiz question 4, we had this access pattern. So we first read from address 0, and the cache had 16-byte blocks, so that would reading a block, which contains values from 0 to 15, or OXF in hex, inclusive. Then we read from address 4, which would go from 0 to F hex, would be written, we wrote to 4, so it would mark that whole block as dirty. So remember, it marks the whole block because we have a dirty bit for the block. We could imagine a cache which has a scheme where we have a dirty bit for every byte or something like that, but that's a lot of extra store bookkeeping in the cache. And that's not what we propose doing. Yes, there have been cache designs proposed that do that, but that's a ton of extra bookkeeping for every block. So that's not what happens. And that means, later on, we're accessing address 2004, and that goes to the same set as 0 and 4. So what we're going to do when we do that write, well, we look up, what does this cache do on writes? It's write allocate, so we're going to put the value in the cache. And it's a direct map cache, so there's only one place to put it. And there's something already there. So we first need to evict that. And to evict it, well, because it's a write-back cache, we need to write the value to the next level, which is main memory in this case, because otherwise we have forgotten about the write. We better not forget about the write, or else you'll be very annoyed if you read that value back later and don't see the value you wrote. So we're going to write the whole block to memory. Why the whole block? Because the cache doesn't have any way of remembering that we didn't actually update the whole block. All it knows is something in the block is updated, and we need to deal with that. And then, in order to add this value to the cache, we need to read in the rest of the block. And so we're going to have a write and a read of well more than one byte of data, just to process this write. Some questions? Okay, so let's do some stuff about cache misses in SQL. So here, I'm gonna have to ask, let's say I have some SQL here, and let's assume that the only thing that's not kept in registers is array. And we're only going to talk about the data cache, not the instruction cache, because the data cache, as we're going to learn, is something where you writing code probably have a lot of power in making sure you have a higher hit rate. So I'm asking, let's say we have a data cache which has one set, and it's direct mapped, meaning that if we think of our cache, we have a block that's going to be 8 bytes, and it's going to have a valid bit and a tag. That is our entire cache. And our block is 8 bytes. And this array here is a total of 16 bytes, which we can divide into 4 parts. We have array of 0, 1, 2, and 3, which takes up 16 bytes because ints are 4 bytes on the systems we've been dealing with. My question is, let's assume how many misses do we have, and let's assume the cache is initially empty. Assume sort of the cache is initially empty, just to keep this problem as simple as we can. How many misses do we expect from this code? Question? Give people a little bit of time to think about it and see what answers we got. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have at least one miss? Hope so. We should probably have at least one miss because we're reading four times and it's initially empty. How about at least two misses? Okay, at least three misses. Okay, and so consensus seems to be two. I think that's probably the most sensible answer, but there's a little thing here where I didn't really give you enough information. So we need to think about how the cache blocks correspond to the array elements. And probably what you were thinking was that they would correspond in this way, that array of 0 and array of 1, they're 8 bytes, our cache blocks are 8 bytes, so that would be one cache block. So we'd read array of 0, we'd have bring in 0 and 1, so we'd have a miss, then a hit, then a miss, then a hit, doing reading in 0, 1, 2, 3. But this is not the only way the cache could have been laid out in memory. It could have been laid out like this. As you can see, we have an extra miss in this case because we're going to read in 0. That's going to bring in 0 and whatever's before the array in memory. Then we're going to bring in 1. That's going to bring in 1 and 2. And we're going to read in 3. That's going to bring in 3 and some stuff after the array in memory. In this case, we'd have 3 misses. And we probably hope that our compiler chooses this, but for placing the array, but maybe it would choose this. And we could have a even more awkward case where maybe we decide to have the array elements straddle cache blocks like this. This is still 3 misses. But this is a lot slower because if you think of how the processor has to execute these loads now, we have to do 2 cache accesses to read one value. So 2, yeah, probably the most sensible answer, but 3 is also possible and in her ways. So compilers usually try to avoid this. So compilers usually avoid this situation by doing something called alignment, where they will try to make sure values don't cross cache blocks unnecessarily. And they'll often try to avoid this situation by trying to have things start near the beginning of a cache block when that's practical. This is generally not done consistently because if we think of having 64 byte cache blocks, we need to add a lot of padding to do that, so compilers won't automatically do that for you. But for the upcoming examples, we're going to assume, to keep things simple, that things start at the beginning of a cache block, even though in practice, the compiler is going to prevent it from crossing cache blocks like this, but it's not really going to prevent this, because to do that, it would need to add a lot of padding if our cache blocks are big. And you'd probably be disappointed if your program, you know, which allocated 4 variables on the stack, you know, the compiler said, oh, well, to make sure everything starts at a cache block, I'm going to allocate 128 bytes for that. You would probably be happy about that. Okay, so let's try a different variant, and let's assume that array of zeros at the beginning of a cache block, so we have this layout, the nice one. Let's do this problem, where I've just changed the order of my statements. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have at least one miss, at least two misses, at least three misses, at least four misses, at least five misses? Okay, so everyone thinks we have four misses, which if we count the number of reads, we have 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's, not everyone, but most people think that, and that's what I get. And basically what's happening here is we read 0, that brings in 0 and 1, because of our layout, they're together in a cache block. We read 2, that brings in 2 and 3. We read 1, that brings in 0 and 1, because they're together in a cache block. The cache blocks sort of start at addresses that are multiple of the block size, so it starts at 0, even though we read 1. And then we read in 3, and we never actually read the one thing we have cached, and we can only cache one thing at a time, so we get misses all the time. Yes? Why do we get misses all the time? Can I explain again? So when you read in 0, we're reading in 0 and 1. And it seems like that would be helpful later on when we read in 1. But the problem is, in between that, we read in 2. And reading in 2 brings in 2 and 3, and we only have one place in this cache to put anything. So 0 and 1 have to go away to put in 2 and 3, because we assume we have locality, which turned out to be wrong. And because we assume we have locality, we always bring in the value we just read. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, yes.
So anytime you do alignment, arrays not in order, you end up doing multiple writes back, and end up repeating the same data multiple times.
So the question is, when I don't have spatial locality, I end up replacing the same data all the time? So this is true with this cache, which only has one place to store things. So whether it's going to be true with the bigger cache is going to depend on some more details of the array accesses in the cache. So let's go through a bit of a bigger example here. So here I have my double the size of the array and double the size of the cache. So now my cache is a two-set cache. So now I have two different sets in which I can place things. So I have, if we think of how we've usually drawn our cache, I have 2 8-byte blocks and 2 different tags and 2 valid bits. And these are selected with a set index bits. Who would like some more time? Okay, go. Okay, so who thinks we have at least two misses? Okay, at least three, at least four, at least five. Okay, so we have pretty good consensus on four. And there's a couple ways you could figure this out. So one way you could thing you could say is that, oh, we 0 and 1 are in a cache block, 2 and 3 are in a cache block, and the only way we can have a hit is if we've accessed that cache block before and it's still in the cache. And so this immediately tells us that 0, 2, 4, and 6 have to be misses because they're the first time we access a cache block. And all the other accesses are just after we access something in the same cache block. So that's one way we could find out 4. We could also use the strategy I showed before. So where we just track the contents of the cache explicitly, and that obviously is useful to know because in a trickier access pattern, it would still work, and the strategy I just told you doesn't work in general. So one way you can think about that is we can say, okay, so we have our array layout, and different parts of the array map to different set indices. And I'm going to assume, to keep things simple, that the first part of the array maps to index 0, but if it maps to index 1, I'm just swapping 0 and 1 everywhere on the slide. And nothing changes about my number of misses, just which sets I got them from. And I can just track the contents of each set of the cache. So I can just go through each access. We read an array of 0. That's going to put something in set 0. We read an array of 1. That's going to be a hit. We read an array of 2. I see that set 2 and 3 are a block, but they map to set 1, so I put them in set 1, and I just go through this like so. And this works. This might seem a little tedious if I had like 10, like 16 sets. This might seem like something you don't want to do. So there's a way we can make this maybe a little more practical, and that's to observe that, well, everything that happens with set 1, so all our accesses, I actually have this highlighted, to set 1 here, they don't get affected by everything that happens, sorry, to set 0 here, are not affected by everything that happens to set 1. Like, they're completely independent because in the cache, we're looking in set 0, we're possibly replacing set 0, we're not doing anything with set 1 here. So I can just look at these independently, figure out the problem the same way I figured out the problem for our one set cases, and then I can do the same for the accesses to set 2, add them together, get my result, and I don't have to track. I can just track one, do one set at a time just by looking for all the accesses to that set, seeing what happens. And in this case, I find out there's this regular pattern, so I can just look at the accesses for set 0 and then say, oh, wait a moment, set 1, this is the same pattern, I can just add the same number. If we had something, let's say if they were different, so let's say, for example, you know, I gave you a problem where I made things tricky by, like, removing this last line. You could still figure that out by saying, oh, you know, you could see that how the special case works without having to worry about set 0 while you're doing that. So we can just look at each set independently, figure out what each set does, add all the sets together. And often when we look at each set, we'll find out, oh, all these sets sort of have the same pattern because our code is regular. And if we don't find that out, well, we're still not tracking, you know, the contents of lots of sets, which when there's only 2, maybe not so bad. When there's like 16 or 256, not really practical. So let's do our version here. Yes?
So when we read the lines, we follow the order of 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. We have to follow the order or we cannot jump.
So the question is, when we read the lines, we have to do the order of 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. So an assumption I'm making here is that the compiler has generated code that does this in order. And when we're doing, looking, evaluating what happens to each set, I still need to follow the order the compiler did, because even though I'm ignoring what's happening to the other sets, you know, as far as that row of the cache is concerned, we're putting in 0, we're checking for 1, we're putting in 4, we're checking for 5. You know, in that exact order, we can't change it. Does that answer your question? So let's do a different variant here. So who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have at least 4 misses? At least 5 misses? At least 6? At least 7? At least 8? Okay, so we have pretty good consensus for 8 misses. I didn't ask about at least 9, but there's only 8 reads, so probably 8's the maximum. And that's exactly what happens. And if we think of what happens to each set, for set 0, the accesses are 0, then 4, then 1, then 5. So we're kind of ping-ponging, just like in one of our earlier one set example where we did 0, 2, 1, 3. Same pattern is happening. And this is what happens for set 0. Set 1's the same. So we have 4 misses for each of these two sets. So we have 8 misses in total. Yes?
So
the question is, when we have a miss, can we be confident the block of the array will always map to a different set instead of the same set? So that only happened because of the indices I chose here. So I figured out what blocks of the array map to what sets, or what array indices map to what sets, sort of up here, right? I said, oh, assuming set 0 is maps to 0, then set 1 maps to 2, and set 0 maps to 4, and so on. And that's how I figured out where things get to set 0. So if we had, instead of this being 0 and 2, if it was 0 and 4, of course, our first two axes would both go to set 0. But it would happen to be 0 and 2. Yes?
There's no way to set up the hash so we recognize that the 0 1's already been in there.
So the question, there's no way to set up the cache so it would recognize that 0 1's already been
placed
into the cache? So there is. So conceptually, we could imagine a cache. So we could imagine a cache which has storage to do that. Here, it doesn't work because there's two issues. So one issue is that each set only has one thing to replace. And the other is that we're assuming that we have good locality. So sensibly, when we read in 4, we're putting it in the cache, even though it turns out that was the wrong decision for this access pattern. That's not the assumption we made when we designed caches. We assume we had locality, so we put it in. So if we had another way, maybe we could figure out a replacement policy that would make this have less misses. Or if we had more sets or something like that, there might be, that would be how we would avoid the misses in this case. Yeah? Question, the reason why we're mapping into different sets is because that's what we're assuming. The reason why we're mapping into different sets is because that's how our mapping to sets work. So if we think of the index and offset bits As I go through this block, my offset bits change, going from 0 to 7. And when my offset bits are all 1s, if I add 1 to the address, I'm going to change an index bit. And so that's why we go 0, 1. And if we had more than two sets, we'd go 0, 1, 2, and 3, and so on. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so let's do a more interesting example. So this is just expanding. So here I have, instead of 8-byte blocks, I have 16-byte blocks. And I have a 2-kilobyte. This is going to be 2 times 2 to the 10, which is 2 to the 11 byte. Who'd like some more time? Would like some more time? So, okay, so who thinks we have at least 100 misses? At least 200 misses? At least 300 misses? Okay, no clue. Okay, so most people say between 2 and 300, so I get we have 1,000 accesses here. I probably should have gained this 1,024 to be consistent. So we have 1,000 accesses, and if we think of what happens, when we access array of 0, we're bringing in 0 through 3, so 1, then accessing array of 1, 2, and 3 right afterwards, those are going to be hits. And when we access array of 4, we're bringing in 4 through 7, so we access 1, 2, and 3 afterwards, those are going to be hits. So that's one way of thinking about it, is that we have a miss. It brings in the three things after that. Then we immediately access those three things, so we have three hits. So a quarter of our accesses are going to be misses, and we have a total of 2,000 accesses because we have two per iteration of, or sorry, we have a total of 1,000 accesses because we have 500 iterations of the loop, two accesses per iteration of the loop. So we have 1,000 divided by 4 equals 250 accesses. Another way we could figure that out is by looking at sets. That array of 0 through 3, if this maps to set 0, then array of 4 through 7 maps to set 1, array of 8 through 11 maps to set 2, and it turns out that this 2 kilobyte cache, we have 2 to the 11 bytes divided by 2 to the 4 bytes per block, is going to have 2 to the 7 equals 128 sets, and when we get to 512 through 517, we're going to go back to set 0, because just before that, going up to 511, is going to be set 127. So we can say, oh, if I think of accessing array of 0, set 0, the accesses to that are going to access 0, 1, 2, 3, then 512, 513, 514, 517, and I find out I have two misses, and every set kind of has that pattern except for the last few, because we only go up to 1,000, and I'll find, and I can count the misses that way. So that'd be another strategy. In this case, probably observing that, oh, I can just look at each block at a time is easier, but that's not always going to work. So here I've made things a little simpler by having, going up to 1,024, but we ask, like, what happens if it has 1,000? And let's just do the first question. I'll talk briefly about the other questions, but we're not going to go into detail about them, because we're going to find out that we're going to sort of abandon this count the exact number of misses approach, leave that to people writing simulators, and have a more approximate analysis that's maybe more practical.
Yeah. which is a different like set. So that would be this, and then for the
Who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's say, so who thinks we have at least 100 misses? At least 200 misses? At least 300? At least 400? At least 500? At least 600? No clue? Okay, a few no clues. So consensus for people who had an answer was at least 500. I get 512. How do I get 512? So one way I can look at this is I can look at each set individually. So let's say 0 through 3 map to set 0. Then if we do our counting, it will turn out 512 through 517 will also map to set 0. So what are our accesses for set 0? So for set 0, we access 0, 2, in their first loop, and then we get up to 512, we do 512, 514, then we access in the second loop 1, 3, and then 513, 515. And how is this going to work since we have one place to store things? So when we access 0, we're going to bring in 0 through 3. So we're going to have a miss and then a hit when we access 2. When we access 512, we're going to bring in 512 through 515. And we only have one place to store things in this direct map cache. So that's going to be another miss and another miss and a hit. But that means that when we get to 1, it's not going to be in there anymore because we just brought in 512 through 515, replacing 0 through 3. So we have a miss and a hit, and then another miss and a hit. This same pattern holds true. And this is going to happen for all the sets. So if we think of set 127 that has 508 through 511 and 1020 through 1023, so it's going to have the same pattern just with the numbers offset. So we end up with having every other access being a miss for every set. So we have 1024 accesses, 512 of them are misses. Question?
So when is 2 and 2 replaced? Because I think
so the question is, isn't this cache big enough that we don't need to replace 0 and 2? So if we look at how this cache works, since it's 2 kilobytes, it can't hold, we have two things in this 4 kilobyte array that map to the same set because it's 2 kilobytes. So I could also have figured it out by looking at the index bits and so on, but it turns out because this array is 4 kilobytes, remember ints are 4 bytes, not 1, we have sort of two things that map to set 0. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
Yeah. So the question is, if we double the cache size, would we have all hits in the second half of stuff? Yes. And there's two ways that could happen. So one way is if we double the cache size by just doubling the number of sets, then instead of having two things that map to set zero, we'd have exactly one block that maps to set zero, and there's no problem. If we double the cache size by doubling the number of ways and keeping the number of sets the same, then now we'd have two blocks we could store, and we wouldn't have any problem. Yeah.
Another question. If the cache size is still the same, but the second for loop is started at the end of the array and went backwards, would that have?
So the question is, if I reversed the order of the second for loop, would that improve my miss rate? Yes. Because we would not have this case where we're accessing this 1 and 3 in between here. No. And that would happen for every set. Question, instead of 256, would we have half the number of misses in the second loop? Yeah, so we'd end up with something like 380-ish misses in that, with that change. Other questions? Okay, so I have some other proposals here. Would a set associative cache be bigger? So I told you, if we make the cache set associative by doubling the size, yeah. If we don't change the size, it wouldn't. And why not? Well, if we think of like doubling, having two ways, but keeping the size the same, we're going to do that by making our cache, going, taking our cache from being this long thin thing to being, to having fewer rows. So we'd have half the number of sets, meaning we'd have twice as many values mapping to the same set. So we'd have the same sort of oversubscription of every set, where there'd be twice as much stuff that needs to go to every set. So even though it has twice as much room, it still has too much stuff going to it. We still have the same number of misses by just having extra ways but the same size cache. If we had 100 elements, then our last few sets here would not have two things mapping to them. So we'd have some extra hits beyond, you know, we wouldn't have every other axis be a miss for those last few sets that now didn't have to worry about, say, 1,020 being a conflict, we would have extra hits. So questions about my reasoning? Okay, this is here. So we've done this sort of very precise miss analysis, and you can absolutely do that. There are simulators to do that, including what you're going to use in the lab tomorrow. If we want to like kind of like reason about writing code, it's not really something we want to be doing all the time. So instead, we're going to talk about two kind of ways of approximating whether our miss rates. And this is going to be based on looking at locality and kind of counting accesses in the inner loop in kind of an approximate way, based on some sort of, to get a quick estimate that's going to help us actually change our code to have better cache performance. So let's start about looking at locality. So here I have two versions of code that do the same thing. The only difference is I've changed how the loops work, but they do the same computation because addition and multiplication are commutative. Oh, addition is commutative. That's the important thing. And my question is, which has better temporal and spatial locality? I think you've done this on a quiz, so. Maybe there's some more. So let's start with, so who'd like more, some more time? Okay, let's people look at this. Go through each of the cases. Okay, who'd still like some more time? Okay, so let's start with temporal locality, which I think is simpler. So who thinks version 1 has better temporal locality for A? How about version 2? No clue. Okay, so we have a bit of a split here. So if I think, look at the access pattern for A. For version 1, we're accessing A of 0, then A of 0, then A of 0, then A of 0, then A of 0, n times. Then we do A of 1, A of 1, A of 1, A of 1. For version 2, we're accessing A of 0, then A of 1, then A of 2, then A of 3, all the way up to n, minus 1. Then we go A of 0, A of 1, A of 2, and so on, and repeat that. And temporal locality was, if I access something, I'm likely to access the same thing again soon. If I look at my version 1 here, if I choose a random access to A, the next access is likely to be the same, or same, you know, and nearby accesses are likely to be the same in time. So I, in fact, do have good temporal locality. If I look at version 2, if I choose a random access to A, say this one, and look at near future accesses to A in the near future, I'm not going back to that same element of A for quite a while, actually, depending on how big N is. So I would say it's better in version 1. How about 4B? Who thinks version 1 has better temporal locality for B? How about version 2? Okay, so we have pretty good consensus for that, and that matches my sort of reading of this. And how about for C? So who thinks version 1 has better temporal locality for C? Version 2? No clue. They're the same. Okay, so I would concur, they're the same. We never repeatedly access a value of C here. The way our indexing works, yeah, all the indices to C are unique. So how about spatial locality in C? C, none. So how about spatial locality in C? So who thinks version 1 is better for spatial locality in C? How about version 2? No clue. So I think we had consensus for version 1. That's what I get. And why do I get that? If I look at the accesses to C, we're doing C of 0, C of 1, C of 2, and so on. And then we're doing all the way up to C of n minus 1, then we're doing C of n, C of n plus 1, n plus 2, then C of 2 times n, 2 times n plus 1. And spatial locality is if we access a value, we're likely to access something nearby soon. So that's very true here, right? We're accessing things that are always adjacent. If I look at what happens here, I'm accessing C of 0, C of n, C of 2 times n, and so on, and then C of 1, C of 1 plus n, C of 1 plus 2 times n. So I'm jumping by n rather than by 1, so I'm less likely to access things that are nearby, especially if n is very big. So in C, I would say this is version 1. So as for spatial locality for A and B, that's a little tricky because definitions of spatial locality differ. As for what do we think of the spatial locality of accessing 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0? And I'm just not going to ask about that, except to say that the spatial locality is very good for both, for A and B, because we're always accessing things that are the same or nearby. So this gives us an idea of, you know, which of these might be better, and what would our conclusion be? Which version should we try to use? Yeah, so just saying version 1. Okay. And version 1 just has better locality than the other version. So they both don't have perfect locality because, you know, version 1 means the accesses to B are kind of not great, but we still have better locality overall, it looks like. So another way we can try to account for this is we can try to, like, sort of actually count the misses. And rather than trying to count each set individually, we'll do a quick approximation, and we're going to take advantage of some patterns we saw when we did our sort of exact counting. And one of those patterns was, often we access a block and then other things in the same block. And also, we noticed that when we access a block and it's been a while since we've accessed anything nearby, when we don't have good locality for that access, usually it's a miss. So our way of estimating misses is going to be that we're going to say the first time we access a block after a while, we're going to assume we have a miss. And in this case, if I'm going by n, I'm going to assume n is big enough that it's been long enough if we've gone n times since accessing this block. So I'm going to assume it's a miss because, well, it's going to be if we make n big enough. And then I'm going to look for repeated accesses to a block. So in this case, we could say, okay, let's say we have four array elements to a block. Well, when I'm accessing A here, I'm going to say, okay, each time we access A, the first time we access the, when we access the block for the first time in the loop, you know, probably we haven't accessed it for a while, so it's probably going to be a miss. And then we access it three more times because we can fit four things in a block because we're accessing A of 0, 1, 2, 3. And so I'm going to have n over 4 misses in this loop for A, because every fourth access to is going to be a miss. We have n of them to A, so I estimate n over 4 misses. And this is sort of glossing over a lot of things. So I'm kind of assuming that it's going to be a miss because n is going to be big enough that we've accessed enough other stuff. I'm also assuming the accesses to B and C kind of don't interfere with A. We know that might not be true, but for a quick approximation, that's going to make things much more practical to compute, so that's what we're going to assume, even though, yeah, if you wanted to know what's actually going on, you need to account for that. So I've given my estimate for A. Can come up with our estimates for B and C. How many misses do we expect per estimated misses? I guess this is per loop over... Oh, this is total misses of A, right. So I should mention how I did this here. So each of these, so this is total misses because we have each time we're accessing A of 0, A of 0, A of 0. So each time you run the J loop, we have a miss every quarter, fourth time, right? Because we keep it in the cache over and over. I'm asking how many misses do we expect for B and C? So for A of 0, so remember the pattern for A was A of 0, A of 0, A of 0, then A of 1, A of 1, all the way up to A of n, again repeating. And we're getting n over 4 because we have a miss the first time every fourth iteration of the I loop, I should say. Question is, what happens for B and C? Who'd like some more time? A few people? Okay. Okay, who can propose an answer for how many misses for B? Yeah?
N squared over 4.
So you got N squared over 4. How did you get that? So in the inner loop, you're saying we have every fourth access is a miss because we're accessing B of 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So we have miss, hit, 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 miss, hit, hit, hit. And we repeat that n times. So that's how you got the extra n times n over 4. Questions about that? How about for C? Anyone have an answer for C? Yeah. Okay, also got n squared over 4. And your reasoning was like probably similar, that, we're accessing different blocks of C. We're accessing a block of C, then the other things in the block three times. So every fourth access is a miss. And it's long. We don't actually access anything repeatedly, so we don't expect any benefits from temporal locality. So that's what I got. So our next sort of topic on this, expanding on this, is we're going to apply this to optimize problems which deal with matrices. So to talk about that, we have to talk about how we store matrices. So I could use a 2D array in C. To make it clearer where things are accessed in memory, I'm going to write out my array indexing like you see in this I times n plus j idea. That's just a way of accessing a 2D, what would be a 2D array, where it's very explicit where in memory it is. We don't have to worry about the layouts of 2D arrays and so on. And I'm going to call the first index the row and the second index the column, even though, yes, you could name them differently. But I'm just going to do that so I have a name. And if we think about how this is stored in cache blocks, often things don't quite line up. So we'll have our first thing as a cache block. Our second cache block might span multiple rows. But we still have each row is kind of one or two cache blocks. So in order to get good performance in this case, we want to access the rows together. And we saw that in our example here, where it was good that we were accessing the rows of C together. That's why we had every fourth access a miss instead of every access being a miss. So we're going to look at matrix multiply just because it's a good illustration of cache optimizations. So I have two versions of matrix multiply. How do we figure out which of these is better? And a way we can look at that is we can say, well, let's look at which of these has better locality in A, B, and C. So in version one, I have good spatial locality, temporal locality here and spatial in C because our inner loop is in K, so that's actually the same every time we run a different iteration of the inner loop. And I have good spatial locality in this, but bad temporal locality, and I have pretty much sort of very bad locality with C, B, because we're changing K, which means we're skipping by N. That's not temporal locality, it's not spatial locality, it's just no locality. Whereas in version 2, I have good spatial locality but bad temporal in C. I have good temporal locality in A, and I have good spatial locality in B. So it seems like, by changing the loops here, we didn't have a clear win like we did in our earlier example. It seems like we made some sort of trade-off. So how do we figure out which one is better? So one way we could do that is we could do our miscounting idea. Is that I could say, okay, if I'm looking at the loop over K, I have for A, because I remember for A, I'm accessing A of 0, A of 1, A of 2, A of 3, then A of n plus 1, A of n plus 0, n plus 1, A of 2, 3, that I have for every loop over K, I have, I miss every one over the block, every block size accesses, right? It's that 1/4 thing we saw earlier. So I can count the misses that way, and I have this happen n cubed times because I have a triply nested loop. So I have about n cubed over, divided by the block size misses for n. Because every, you know, so if our block size is 4 elements, every 4th access to A is going to be a miss. And we have n cubed of them. For B, because remember we said we have no locality here, I'm doing B of 0, B of n, B of n times 2. Every access is likely to be a miss because it's far apart from any recent access. So I expect about n cubed misses. And for C, we have this good temporal locality. So we're accessing C of 0, C of 0, over and over. Then we're accessing, it turns out, C of 1, C of 1. So I expect a miss every, I expect at most one miss per the inner loop. And usually it won't be because, you know, I went from 0 to 1 when J goes from 0 to 1. And that should be in the same block. So I actually expect about one miss divided by the block size. So if we have 4 things in a block, I expect to miss every 4th time you run the loop over K. So that gives me n squared divided by the block size misses. Some questions about how I did this sort of approximate miscounting here. So I can do the same analysis for the second version, and I get about n squared misses for A, n third divided by the block size for B, n to the third divided by the block size for C. So my total misses is about, the total here is approximately 2 times n to the third divided by the block size. My total here was approximately n to the third plus n to the third divided by the block size. And that's approximately because I'm just saying n squared is so much smaller than n to the third, I'll just ignore it for approximation. So you can see we expect like a 4 to 2 ratio between the two. We expect ratio depending on the block size. We expect a huge difference. And if we count misses, we in fact get that. Or count performance, we in fact get that. With the two loop orders, the performance, they take the same number of instructions, but because of cache misses, the alternate order on my testing machine was about twice as fast. But what we're going to talk about next time is you might be disappointed in both of these. Because, you know, sure, the second version's better, but we still have pretty bad locality here, right? We couldn't get this really nice locality we had in C, like, really anywhere, right? We have okay locality in A, but we don't have spatial locality anymore. Is there some, like, better compromise? And the answer is yes. So there's something which is going to be better than any fiddling we could do with just these loops by changing their order. There's going to be some other transformation we can do that's going to allow us to have good locality in all of A, B, and C instead of having them be less crappy like we're seeing here. And that's what we're going to talk about next time.